little time up, I guess we've all been waiting for. It's my pleasure to introduce the speaker for tonight's meeting, Hillary D. from St. Bernard, Alabama.
Why do you all in California have to be so big? My name is Hillary Draper, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. Good evening. And lest I forget my manners, I want to thank the congregation. I've been talking with my Lutheran brother over there, and he's complaining. He says in 45 minutes, he's been hit up financially 3 times. I said, Father, guests and newcomers are asked not to contribute. I do and am grateful to the committee who invited me to be a part of your conference. I'm grateful to be at any AA affair, and particularly happy to be here because there are some people that I've come to know and to love in the California, in the Wild West part of the country, in AA. And I don't get to see them too often, so it's been a sort of reunion for me. So my thanks. I used to say, my name is Father Hillary, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic, but one of my sponsors got a hold of me, and he said, there you are, going around standing up saying your name is Father Hillary, like you something. Said, you ain't nothing but a drunk. You better stand there and say, my name is Hillary Draper, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. I thought that over, and he's right. It is only because of a higher power, whom I choose to call God, and to whom AA reintroduced me, and trying to practice the principles of this blessed program in my life a day at a time, with the help of many people, just like you all, that Hillary Draper, the drunk, can take on the role of Hillary Draper, the priest and the teacher. And for that, I am everlastingly grateful and will be so. I got to tell you quick how I got here. The boss man at this convention called me up and he says, last year I asked you to come and you couldn't do it. Now come this year. I said, well, I've got to be in Memphis Friday night on church business and I can't get out of that. And I got to be back in Birmingham on school business Sunday night and I can't get out of that. And I thought, sure, he'd say, well, don't come then. Because I've been taught that you come on Thursday and you stay till the last shot is fired. But he said, come anyway. I said, all right. So last night at 9:30, I set out from Memphis, Tennessee. And I got to Dallas at 11:30 sometime. And I stayed there till 2:30. And I got to San Francisco at 3:30. And I stayed there till 8:30, whereupon I got onto an airplane run by a thing called STOL. There were 8 of us in the airplane. And the man driving the thing said, It's just a brand new airplane. We just got it. It's an Islander. He says, makes a little noise when you take off, and we're going to do some quick turning when we get up. But don't worry, it'll be all right. I said my prayers, and we took off, and we went sailing over the ocean. And I'm by the window, and I don't like to fly. And there's a lady sitting next to me. I said, honey, you think it's supposed to spit all out like that? She says, I don't know. The man sitting behind says, my God, the thing's on fire. The man driving the airplane, somebody told him about it. He said, well, we've only got one motor, so we'll have to go back. He says, don't anybody get excited, because we can easily get on one motor, I think. And then he says, everybody keep calm, because when we come down, there's going to be fire engines and all kind of emergency equipment out there, but I don't think we'll catch fire. Ooh, I said, I didn't come out here to get killed. And sure enough, we came back in, and all these big airliners were off to the side, and the fire trucks were there, and the foam was going, and we came down. He complimented us on not getting upset. I was paralyzed with fear. So I'm very glad to be here. I'm going to get my insurance paid up, and I'm going to confession before I leave. They won't believe that at home when I tell them, but it's the gospel truth. Well, that's how I got here, and I've had a great day all day long, and delighted to be here. What am I supposed to do? Entertain you? No. Although entertainment may be part of it. I'm supposed to say, according to the big book, what I was like, what happened, and what I am like today. For a long time, I misread that. I thought it said what it was like, what happened, what it is like today. My sponsor told me I got that mixed up, and I've tried to straighten it out. There are some of you here who've heard me before. And that reminds me of the time I was speaking in Mobile, Alabama, which is my own hometown, to the DCCW. That's the Diocesan Council of Catholic Women. You know, the ladies with the mink and the perfume running the church. I was to give the keynote address at the convention I did. And I was on the stage, and Madam President was giving me an introduction, and she said at the end of the introduction, that some of us have heard Father Hilary before, and some of us have not. Those of us who have not are looking forward to hearing him now. But you know, if you stay in AA very long, you're going to hear the same old stories over and over again. There's some people out there, I know a couple, that could tell my story as well as I could tell it myself. You can tell yourself, what's the sense of going to a meeting and listening to the same old story? I've heard that one. Well, I believe that AA demands a kind of childlike faith. I didn't say childish. I think when I was a practicing alcoholic, I was childish. But you know how little children are? You tell them a story, and next week they say, tell us that story again. And you start to tell it. And they say, oh, no, that's not the way it goes. And they'll listen to it over and over again as long as it has a happy ending. And thank God, tonight, my story still has a happy ending. What is alcoholism? Or as we say in Alabama, alcoholism. The big book tells us that it's a mental obsession coupled with a physical compulsion to drink. My own definition, I say an alcoholic is a man or a woman of whatever age who drinks and gets in trouble because he drinks, and drinks and gets in trouble because she drinks, and drinks and gets in trouble because he drinks, and gets in trouble because, and drinks. Now, you can get into trouble for other things, but if I had gotten into as much trouble in the last 3 years of my drinking from eating watermelon, I'd have quit it a long time ago. And then I used to wonder, I really did, I know you're not supposed to, but I can't help it. Why was I an alcoholic? Me, with my fine background, what was I doing an alcoholic? My home was filled with tender, loving care. The God that I was introduced to was a tender, loving God. What was I doing an alcoholic? With my fine, aristocratic background from Mobile, Alabama, and here's my eminent divine theological training, what in God's name am I doing an alcoholic? And one night in Coleman at the group closed meeting, I asked that question, and this silence came over the group, you know, the silence that comes when everybody knows the answer, they're just waiting to hear it's going to zap him. And my sponsor, Juby, says, "Well, Father, it don't make no difference how the jackass got into the ditch, just get him out." And there is the glorious, simple wisdom of AA. It doesn't make any difference. And AA has let this jackass out of the ditch today. And for that, I am everlastingly grateful. If I had to say, well, I've got one more point there that I ought to make. It's not original. I have heard so many AAs start off and say, "I was born at a very early age in a good Christian family," that I'm not sure that's anywhere to raise children anymore. But at any rate, I was born at a very early age in a good Christian family, and it was Catholic. And we did not think it was wrong, morally wrong, to drink in moderation. Make no mistake about it. Catholics think it is seriously morally wrong to get drunk, just like the Baptists and some of the Methodists do. But if you asked me, "Father Henry, when did you have your first drink?" I couldn't tell you. It was always there. And as kids, we didn't have it every day, but company, feast days, celebrations, the kids would get a small wine glass with a little bitty wine and cold water. If it could be said of anyone that he had a marvelous education and how to learn how to drink like a gentleman, it should have been me. I came from a great big family. I had 7 aunts and a couple adopted, and they had their own population explosion in Mobile. I've got 60-something first cousins running around. There's one uncle, call him Harry. When you get in front of that pack, the leader of the tribe at weddings and funerals, and in order to steady his nerves, he'd always take a few drinks. The only thing is, he'd get so steady he couldn't move. And the uncles would have to carry him home. But again, marvelous education, my mother would, I can remember it, would say to us kids the next day, "You saw Uncle Harry. If you discover that that's what alcohol does for you, then you just shouldn't drink. But you saw the rest of your uncles and aunts. They were perfect ladies and gentlemen." So, you know, if I had to say in a nutshell what I was like, I would put it this way, and I can do it in a nutshell. I had been in the monastery a few years, a young man, maybe not 21 yet. And one of the confreres walked up to me one day and he said, "Father Henry, You know, he said, I think your motto ought to be, videre quam esse. Well, I knew that the classical motto was esse quam videre. And when you translate it, it said to be rather than to seem to be. And here this joker was saying to me, my motto should read to seem to be rather than to be. And I submit that that's really exactly, I don't know why, but that was me all over. I always wanted to be something I wasn't. If the train missed me by a block, by the time I got through telling you, it'd be 2 inches. I don't know why that is. I had to be very careful about telling you that airplane story tonight, because I could have embellished that very easily. I'm a prepared liar. And you know, I don't have to lie anymore since I'm in AA, but I do. And I don't know why that, I don't have to lie anymore. But it's one of those character defects that I'm trying to work on. That I always wanted to be something I wasn't. And if you wonder what I'm like today, put it in a capsule, we can sit down. I'm trying to be rather than to seem to be. It's that simple. We know that this disease is progressive. I told you we don't know how come I got it. I'll tell you when I discovered I had it, but I didn't acknowledge I had it. I was 19, well, I better as well tell you that. I was 15 years old. My father was dead, God rest his soul. My mother thought I needed some more men in my education. So I say she sold me up the river from Mobile, Alabama, to the tender mercies of the Benedictine monks at Cullman, and I never got away. And when I got to Cullman, I had a great time. I discovered my classmates who lived in the city, the little town. Every housewife, waste the name at that time, knew how to make this German-type grape juice. Only they did it with strawberries. And if you all never tasted Cullman County strawberry wine before you got into AA, it's just too late. You have to wait to get to heaven. The most glorious color, a gorgeous bouquet, and a marvelous kick. But again, you were in wonderful shape. You had a small glass of wine, a piece of cake, you were with company. No problem. I was at Cullman and got into college. I loved the monks, the whole thing so much, I decided I wanted to be part and parcel of it. I asked them if they'd let me in, and they said I could try. And so I got in. You know what I discovered? That the monks of Cullman were not about to be outdone by the housewives of Cullman. And they too knew how to squeeze that grape and make that German-type grape juice, and they made a little homebrew on the side. Now, I wouldn't want you to think there's 60 drunk monks at Cullman. There isn't. There's me. The rest of them are pretty normal people. But looking back, I can see today. It meant, the monks didn't drink every day on feast days for an hour after Vespers, Gemütlichkeit, if you know that German word, come together for conversation, homemade wine, beer, pink lemonade for the panty waist. But looking back, you know, I was always the first one there and the last one to leave. I was always counting the days till the next one that would happen. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. When years later they asked me, how much did you drink, Father Hilary? How much did you drink? Trying to get honest, you know. I said, well, I guess I have to say that from the time I was 19 years old, I always drank as much as there was to drink, as often as there was anything to drink, as long as there was anything to drink. I never knew when you took the cork out of the bottle or unscrewed the cap that you did anything with that but throw it away. Because if I was there, you wouldn't need it. I suffered my first blackout, 19 and a half years old, a novice in a monastery. Believe me, you don't join monasteries to become drunks. You know what a blackout is? I'll explain it. You drink and you drink and you drink, and something happens. And the body, in order to save its life, turns off. And you slide gently under the table. And you stay there until somebody picks you up and carries you home. Or you may be there the next morning when you get home yourself. That is not blacking out. That's passing out. And unfortunately, I've done that. But blacking out's different. You drink and you drink and you drink, and there's a different kind of short circuit. In order again to save its life, the body does something. It's what I guess you could call it best temporary amnesia. We continue to function, some of us, for days, and we don't have the slightest memory of it. And at 19 years old, 19 and a half years old, at Christmas in the monastery, I experienced my first blackout. You know, I think the next morning when it dawned on me what had happened and I slipped around to try to find out if anything bad had happened, and nothing did, I stayed at the party till it was over, helped to clean up, take the dishes back, helped the old monks to their rooms, said my prayers, went to bed. But there's about 3 hours that I don't remember a blessed thing. I'm convinced today that even then I knew that alcohol did that. But you see, I liked everything about alcohol at that time. I liked everything about it. I liked the smell. I liked the taste. I was kind of like to roll it around my mouth, swallow it slow, and then suck my teeth. Now, if that disturbs you, I'm sorry, but that's the way it was with me. And I don't think that I could have possibly admitted that experience, I didn't know what a blackout was, that temporary amnesia. But being a smart kid, I had to account for it. And so I said it was the cheese. I'm still not comfortable with cheese. That's a lie. I'm perfectly comfortable with cheese. But there it is. I mean, I'm a full-blown alcoholic. You know, if you're in doubt about whether you are alcoholic, you know, and another clergyman that I know in AA is famous for saying, you know, when they say, well, he's not that bad, how bad you want him to get? It's like you can never be a little bit pregnant. You either are or you aren't, one of the two. And you're not a little bit alcoholic. You either are or you aren't. Period. Just like that. But one almost Satan sign that you got it is if you have experienced a blackout. So if you're in doubt, you're still fooling around with Al-Anon and you've had blackouts, come on over. We'll be glad to have you. We know, too, the disease is progressive. And that means it gets worse. In my own book, The Disease of Alcoholism progresses to one of three ends. Number one, you keep on drinking. If you have crossed that invisible line between controlled drinking and uncontrolled drinking, which we label alcoholism. If I'm an alcoholic, my disease is going to progress to one of these three ends. Either I will end up dead drunk, in the literal meaning of those two words. Or secondly, I can end up in what is euphemistically called custodial care. Or number three, you quit. The day came when Hillary Draper finally knew he had to quit. And he couldn't. The day finally came, but it was a long time in coming. I had a lot of running to do, a lot of progressing to do. We were sent to Kansas to study philosophy, and the monks in Kansas, they all belong to the WCTU. So they don't drink. You want to bet? If I had to classify myself, as far as my drink was concerned, you know, a bar drinker, I'd have to classify myself as a chicken house drinker. Because that's where they kept it in my, those years in Kansas. And there's a lot more going on in the chicken houses of North Alabama than just laying eggs, I'll tell you. But you see, it's hidden drinking. It's not accepted. But that doesn't bother me. Again, my pattern is often as much as, wherever. We return to Alabama for theology, and guess what? We've got a new abbot in Alabama, and they've closed up the cellars, and the monks of Alabama are not drinking anymore. Want a bet? Having us a bet thing. We went through that on a national scale, and it didn't work. And you Al-Anons that have been pouring the whiskey down the drain, forget it. You know, they'll find it. So, but now it's not accepted in Alabama anymore. It's a hidden thing, but that doesn't bother me as often as I can. In 47, I'm ordained a priest. And believe me, if there'd been any overt signs that Hillary Draper was an alcoholic, the Archbishop would never have called me to the priesthood. The Catholic Church has got enough problems without ordaining drunk monks. The opportunities are more frequent for drinking. We had a big prep school at that time, associate principal. I said, I don't get in any trouble, but I'm getting these terrible personality conflicts with the boss. You can have personality conflicts for any number of reasons, but I think that with enough goodwill on both sides, you can resolve them unless alcohol's in the picture. If alcohol's in the picture, you ain't going to resolve nothing. And alcohol's in the picture. I'm convinced that the boss knew this. But I'd have just dared him to say anything to me about it. If he had, I'd have been on him like a bee on a bulldog. I said, what you talking about? I'm in that office at 8 o'clock in the morning. I teach 5 classes a day. I'm at all the prayers. Why don't you get to some of these bums over here not doing a blessed thing? Maybe I drink a little bit too much, but that's my business. I'm not hurting anybody. Which was a lie. But he doesn't face me with it. What he does is give me a geographical cure removal before I know what that is. I explain that to you, too. A geographical cure removal is the alcoholic, he messed up his nest so bad that he can't stand to live in it anymore. And so he moves into a new nest. The only trouble is he brings himself with it, and in short order, that one's pretty foul, too. Well, I got a geographical cure removal to the mountains of Kentucky, where Kentucky, Virginia, and Tennessee come together around the Cumberland Gap area. Lord have mercy. President Johnson declared it a disaster area, and I said it was a disaster in the 50s. Oh, great day in the morning. The first morning I was there, the priest I was replacing said, you take your meals over at Aunt Sally Coon's house. She lives next door. She's not a Catholic. In fact, she's a member of the Lottie Moon Circle. Uncle Albert's a Catholic, her husband. You're riding the circuit so much through the mountains that you're not home very much. That house belongs to you. And in place of rent, they feed you. So, the first month I'm there, we say Mass. We go over to Aunt Sally Coon's for breakfast. Aunt Sally Coon, she looks like nothing so much as Mammy Yoakum. She. 4-room house. Kitchen table, Uncle Albert, a beautiful man in his 60s. He's sitting down there. The other priest is here. Uncle Albert's son is a state trooper in his 30s. He's down there with nothing over the fast shots. His 2 kids, 18, 16. I never saw ladies sit down at those tables. Anyhow, there was a big water glass sitting in front of me. Hot September. Difficult conversation. I picked up that glass and took 2 great big swallows. You all have seen the atomic bomb blast. My eyeballs turned over. My eardrums went in and out. I couldn't breathe. Again, looking back, I'm convinced if I hadn't been an alcoholic, I would have screamed. But I didn't say a word. I wait till I see it, can see again and hear. And I notice Uncle Albert's got one. The other priest, the trooper's got one. Well, after that breakfast, the other priest and I were stepping high over the weeds going back to the church. And I said to him, in God's holy name, what was in that water glass? He said, moonshine, 120 proof. I said, for breakfast? He said, anytime you can get it. My shit. Wasn't that a glorious place to send a budding alcoholic? And I bloomed. Oh, I say I didn't get in any trouble. I was there about 4.5 years. Except I progressed. Man, I can't tell you the whole thing. By this time, I've got to have it. I don't have to drink it every day, but I got to have it. I want it sitting there on the closet in case of steak bite, in case I want to celebrate something like Hungarian Freedom Fighters Day or something. I recall to the college, I'm dean of the college there, and I bring the whiskey with me. This time, I mean, I've just got to have it. I don't still have to drink it every day, but it's got to be there. Again, the same old pattern. Nothing's going to get better. This time, I'm convinced the boss knows, oh, this time, you know, we're convinced, I think, nobody knows. Nobody knows. His wife knows, his children know, his dog knows. But he doesn't know. Or at least he won't admit it. I'm convinced there is a spiritual blindness connected with this disease. I get another geographical cure removal, this time to the delta of the Mississippi. If you all think the delta is in southwest Louisiana, you're mistaken. It begins in the lobby of the Peabody Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee. And he sends downriver, 40 miles on the Mississippi side, 20 miles on the Arkansas side, and you come to Yazoo City. If y'all haven't lived in the Delta, you don't know the South. They don't know the Civil War was lost. They don't even know it was fought and couldn't care less. I thought I had come to paradise. These were the long, hot summers of the 60s. Mississippi was a dry state. Dry? I tell you, I thought I had come to paradise. Pick up the telephone and say, Mamie? She said, be right there, Father. Father Malachy tells me I tell you that story to be sure you know that Mamie was a bootlegger. I don't know whether y'all had trouble with empty bottles, but every time I open the closet, it's full of empty. I say, I can't have drunk up all that whiskey. Somebody's putting these bottles in here. And there I was in Mississippi. Mamie would come, take the dead soldiers out, give them decent Christian burial, put in new ones, and send you a bill at the end of the month. Man, I had it made in the shade, except I was beginning to come apart. The big book tells us this disease affects the total human personality. We come apart spiritually, emotionally, and mentally. And finally, physically. And I was coming apart spiritually, emotionally, mentally. By this time, people are beginning to talk ugly about me. You know how they do? Three of the finest men I ever knew out of that congregation came to me, and I know what it cost them. And they said, Father Hillary, we love you very much, but we've got to talk to you. There's no way you can deny that on such and such occasions in public you had too much to drink. A euphemistic way of saying you were falling down drunk. So we can't have it in this parish. It'll tear down everything we're trying to do. You're a good man. We think you've done wonderful work, but you can't get away with that. They said, we're not going to the bishop over this because, listen, we know that with a little willpower, the grace of the sacraments, and prayer, you can get on top of this problem. And I believed them, the more fool I. I mean, what willpower? Step one, admitted we were powerless over alcohol and lives had become unmanageable. What willpower? Do you have any willpower left? What sacraments? Dear Lord, I had abused the grace of God to such an extent, at least that's the way I saw it at that time, because I knew nothing of the disease concept. I couldn't stand myself. What prayer? Oh, at one time I knew how to pray, and AA's taught me again how to pray. For the last few years of my drinking, the only prayer I knew how to say, and listen to this, was, Dear God, get me out of this one and I'll never do it again. And Juby says, Oh, hell, Father Henry, God ain't no horse trader. He don't need your damn horses. Think that one through. It's not a quid pro quo thing. Step three says, made a decision to turn our lives and our wills over to the care of God as we understood Him. We don't bargain with God. We don't say, Dear God, you do this and I'll do that. I'll do this and you do that. No, no. Step three says, Hey, I've had it. I've had it up to here and over. There's not a blessed thing I can do. I am completely just had it, period. And I fall into the merciful arms of an ever-loving God. Man, I'm going too long with this business. We had a new boss back at Coleman. Damn Yankee, didn't know nothing. He turned out to be my savior and is today my dearest friend. And Lord of mercy, he came to see me in Mississippi, scared me to death. I thought he's on his way to Dallas. You got to understand the Catholic Church. When these bishops and these abbots show up with these gold chains and heavy rings on, that's trouble. And he came, and we had a lovely supper that night. It was a big Italian parish, and we had drinks before, and anti-pasta, and anti-pasta, and pasta, and wines with supper, and after dinner drinks. I didn't touch a thing. The next morning, the old man's leaving. I said to his aide-de-camp, What's wrong with him? Oh, he said, Did he talk to you last night? I said, No more than what I heard you. Oh, he said, Well, he said, The board of trustees has nominated you as president of the Congress. And the old man, as chairman of the board, said he thought he'd better interview you before he acted on the nomination. And he told me last night he was very happy. You know, I got the bid. Now, I never had any trouble with step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. When they told me I was nuts, I was so happy I couldn't see straight. Here's an example of it. I was offered the job of president of the college. I think any sane man with my track record at that time would have said, Of course not. I cannot do that. The responsibility involved, I just can't do it. What does the alcoholic with this towering ego say? Of course I can do it. You don't think they'd be asking a drunk to be president of a college? That'll show these people over here whether or not I'm a drunk. They gave me a glorious send-off party. I know they were saying today, thank God he's gone. But again, because of this blessed program, I've been able to go back to Mississippi and make amends. I can hold up my head again because of this blessed program. But I became president of the college. Whoo! Dear, dear Lord. I remember very well, though, I thought, now, Hillary, you have a little problem here, you know. Because by this time, I don't know about you all, did anybody besides me ever lose the automobile? Where did you put the car? I don't know where I put the car. It's not your car. It belongs to the parish. Where is the automobile? I don't know where the automobile is. Yeah, you think it's funny. Did you get across the Mississippi River Bridge, or is it still over in Arkansas? I don't know. When I was drinking, I used to have the shakes and the hot flashes. I don't shake anymore. Look at that hand. But I still do get the hot flashes. And if this man bothers you, that's your problem. If you want to be a practicing alcoholic, get to be president of a college. That's all I got to say. It's there morning, noon, and night. I had a marvelous reputation being a lovely host. I'd always save the drinks. That guaranteed me two when you got one. But it was progressive. Things now coming apart every which way. I can't remember what I'm saying. I can't remember what commitments I've made. I can't go into all that. You understand all that business. Finally, the day came in December 1967. The president of the college would make a State of the Union message after a big-time dinner. 8 o'clock at night. I still get nervous at 8 o'clock at night. I wish we could meet some other time in Coleman, but we meet at 8 o'clock at night. It's all right. And the president gave the report. In front of the board of trustees, the faculty senate, the student government association, the only thing is, the last thing I remember, and that's the truth, it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I was taking one more drink to steady my nerves. I made that speech at 8 o'clock. Figuratively, my throat was cut from ear to ear. The next morning, I noticed a little coolness on the campus. And I did it. A short while after, I was... I don't know about you, Roy, you know, but I always had so many things going to keep people from finding out what was really happening. And I happened to go into the chancellor's office, the abbot, and I had about 6 things going, and he said, "Sit down, I want to say something to you." But that reminds me of this little story, which I think is very good. There was a man who had a 2-ton truck, and he was hired to transport 3 tons of canaries from Montgomery to Birmingham. And he got an alcoholic, and he says, "You get in the back of that truck, and you keep exactly 1 ton of canaries in the air at all times." And only an alcoholic would take a job like that. And that was me. I had a ton of canaries in the air at all times. But he says, "We had a boy... meeting of the board of trustees. I got to make this short." And he says, I said, "You did." I wasn't there. Me, Nancy, she, I'd gotten myself elected to the board of trustees. I figured they couldn't fire me. He said, "No, but there was a quorum." I said, "What was on the agenda?" And he looked at me with compassion, love. He said, "There was only one thing, Father Henry, your resignation." This is December. I'm still nasty, me. I said, "When is it effective?" "In June." He says, "It's effective right now. We've drawn up the papers. Please sign here." He said, "You have disgraced your own good name." You know, I can't. Maybe I haven't. I don't know. Don't talk to me about the hallucinations. I've had them. Don't talk to me about the running fits. You can't sit still. You can't go. You can't lie down and you can't sit down. The running fits. I know what you're talking about. I've been there. Don't talk to me about the lies and the not remembering. Don't talk to me about the things you've done and they come back to haunt you and you can't remember that you did them, but there they are in black and white. Don't talk to me about jail. I'm not happy about that. Would you think that would stop the president of a college, a priest? Sometimes people, it doesn't bother me. Sometimes people say, "Father Henry, you shouldn't wear your collar when you go to AA." I said, "Well, I don't know many priests who don't, but that's, I figure, their business." But you see, I never took this collar off when I was drinking. And maybe I should have. But that's another story. But I figured if I never took it off when I was drinking, I'm sure not going to take it off when I'm in AA. If that bothers you, that's your problem. Everybody protects us, you know. People talk about ladies, women drunk, said nothing worse than a lady drunk. Nothing worse than a black drunk. I got news for you, there is. There's nothing worse than a preacher drunk. Who wants him? Nobody. I got news for you. Nobody wants a drunk preacher. Period. Don't, we get to laughing a lot. Laughter, I think, is part of the program. You know, a new man come into the group, he's not laughing. He doesn't say anything to laugh about. He thinks we're nuts. But let him stay around 6 or 7 weeks, and one night he'll go, ha ha. And when he does, you know he's getting better. AA teaches us the ultimate humility of being able to laugh at ourselves. And then you can come along and laugh with me. You never laugh at me. We laugh together as we weep together. But we get to laughing too much at Coleman. Juby will say, all right. All right. Let's not forget the vomit. That's the way they pronounce it in Coleman. And believe me, that always brings my feet right back to the ground. Man alive. So don't talk to me about high-bottom drunks and low-bottom drunks. One of my old sponsors said the only difference he knew was a high-bottom drunk had his head on the curb. You can go as far as you want to go. You can get off any time you want to get off. The boss man said, you have done everything in your power to disgrace your own good name. You have dragged the name of this college through the mud. You have made our life in this monastery a living hell. And we don't want you anymore. We have had all of you we intend to put up with. You get away from here. We don't want you anymore. I don't know if I can make you understand what that said to me, ladies and gentlemen. You talk about a bottom. The things I loved the most were the priesthood and St. Bernard. And that day in December 1967, they were gone. As far as I knew, they'd never come back again. There wasn't any way you could put Humpty Dumpty back together again. It was gone. A lost ball in the high weeds. He didn't leave me there. He looked at me and said, what I wish you'd do. He says, I'll help you get a job anywhere in the country, teaching school. You're a good teacher. But what I wish you'd do is go somewhere else and get some help with your drinking problem. He didn't even know the word alcoholism. And I said yes. There was no way I could say no to the first part of that injunction. I was gone. But I could have said no to that, go somewhere and get some help with your drinking problem. I'm convinced if I had said no that day, I would not be here today. I'm convinced I would be dead. I don't believe I could have borne the burden of guilt. I really don't. And I used to wonder, what let me catch what for me was the moment of grace? I really used to think about that. And I've come to the conclusion that if I was able to catch the moment of grace, it was because of all the magnificent and beautiful Al-Anons who loved me so desperately and who knew nothing to do for me except to pray for me. And for that reason, I love Al-Anon as much as I do AA today. Anyhow, the boss man had heard of a place called Hazelden up in Minnesota that did something to help people who were bad to drink. And I got sent to Hazelden. You know, I didn't know what they did. I had heard about AA, but I didn't know. I'd never seen the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know whether they cut something out of you, whether they stuffed something up in you, whether they plugged up your ears, turned your head around. I didn't know what they did. There are what I call gold-plated south traps. That'll dry you out, introduce you to the pills, and turn you loose to run again. And I'm grateful that I missed one of those. There are no such thing as AA treatment centers, but there are treatment centers that use this blessed program, and Hazelden was one of those. In that far-off day, and I count my birthday as January the 14th, 1968. Since that day, I've not found it necessary, thank God, to take a drink or a mood-changing drug. A day at a time. But that was the day I went to Hazelden. At that time, it was a 3 week program. And they said to me the second day, now take that collar off, Father Henry. You ain't no priest. You ain't nothing but a drunk. Ooh, they talk so bad up there. But see the hypocrisy? I've been thrown out. I'm still wearing the collar. And they said, take it off. You're not entitled to wear it. You don't belong anymore. You're out. They said, I don't plan on getting this program in 3 weeks. I said, of course not. I reckon I'll get it in 2. He said, oh, no, we mean the other way. He said, for preachers, ministers, doctors, lawyers, undertakers, Indian chiefs, salesmen, it takes 3 and 4 times as long to get this simple program. I said, how come? They said, because you all keep up such a dreadful front, it takes a long time to get behind that and find out where the real Father Hillary lives. And they were right. They told me, I hate to tell this, they told me to read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said to myself, I'll be damned if I'll read it. Here I am locked up in a treatment center for being drunk, the disease of alcoholism. They're trying to help me, and they say, read this blessed book. I don't tell them that because I was afraid they'd hit me. Well, I said, I'm not going to just... I'll be damned if I'll read it. Well, I stayed there a while. The only thing they did, they had 3 meetings a day. One in the morning, one in the afternoon, one in the evening. And then they had, like, closed meetings twice a week. You had to go, whether you wanted to or not. I think I was there 8 or 9 weeks. I forget which. But you count 3 times 7 is 21. Count 8 to make sure. That's 168 meetings, at least, that I went to in the first 8 weeks that I was dry. I'm a great believer in go to the meetings. The program's simple. Don't take a drink. Read the big book. Go to the meetings. Go to the meetings, don't take a drink, read the big book. Read the big book, go to the meetings, don't take a drink. If it's not working for you, figure out which one of those 3 simple steps you ain't doing. I mean it. I mean it. That's basic. Anyhow, he said, I was there and I began to notice that the people who were getting out worked steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And if you didn't wait, step 1, 2, 3, you're going to be there till Gabriel blew his horn. So I said, well, I really don't want to stay here all my life. So I began to read the big book. And I began to talk to some other drunks, thinking I might help them. It's no wonder they didn't run me off. I'd go to the man, he'd say, you haven't got the first step. I said, yes, I have. I'm an alcoholic. I'm powerless. He says, you haven't got to go read the book some more. I know today he was absolutely right. I did not get the first step. I have to say this. I'm convinced I didn't get the first step until I'd been in AA a year. And when I got to the master teachers at Cullman, Alabama, that's when I got it from up here down to here. Where action is the magic word. They were right. I didn't get it. But be that as it may, I finally got step 2, step 3. Oh, I was so happy to get step 3. That didn't bother me. I was just so glad to see God again. Yeah. Step 4. May it take me to finish mine. I did it. I took it to the man. He says, oh, hell, you've made another mistake. You've gone and taken an immoral inventory. He says, you're supposed to put down the good and the bad. I said, I can't think of anything good. He says, didn't you love your mother? I said, yes. He says, put it down. Oh, they were mean. Oh, step 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and other human beings, the exact nature of our wrongs. I did it. Now, pay attention. I just finished taking a 5th step. And this blessed man says to me, there was another clergyman, and he said to me, now, Father Hillary, if you believe that alcoholism is a disease, when you go back to Cullman, are you going to tell people you're an alcoholic? I said, of course not. I said, that's the stupidest question I ever heard. You don't understand the South. We don't run around the big center. Watch out for me. I got tuberculosis. If a man's in the hospital, what he's in there for, that's his business. No, I'm not going to say I'm an alcoholic. And furthermore, you know I can't go back to Coleman. He says, why can't you go back to Coleman? I said, you know why I can't go back to Coleman? Now, mind you, I told you the things I love the most of the priesthood and St. Bugs, they both happen to be at Coleman. I got further news for you. We've had priests before this who had problems with drinking. We didn't know what to do for them. If somehow or another we could get them dried out, we never let them return to the scene of the crime. We sent them west to New Mexico, Arizona, California. We never let them return to the scene of the crime. And here he said, you go back to Coleman. He says, were you running around with women? I said, no. He said, did you embezzle the college's money? I said, no. He said, so you lost the job, and you were thrown out of the priesthood because of the disease of alcoholism. He said, the president of the bank at Coleman, he lost the job the same way. 9 times out of 10, you have to go back, not as president, but pick up the pieces. When are you going to quit running? I says, all right. I'll quit running. I'll go back. Now you convince the board of trustees to let me come back. You know what? He did, they did, and I did. Oh, Lord. Well, they didn't let me come right straight back. But I'm grateful that when these alcoholic people who knew something about this disease said to the trustees, take Father Hillary back home, they let me come back home. They simply said I had to wait until after the semester for certain reasons. And so I got sent up to New Hampshire to spend a little time. And I ran into AA up there. It was all priestly AA. Nothing but priests. And it was great for me. Except, I think this is my own opinion. You've got to belong to a grassroots group. You can belong to a doctor's group if you want to. You can belong to a minister's group. You can belong to a lawyer's group. I don't care. I don't care what you belong to. But I'm convinced that you must belong to a grassroots, ordinary God variety of AA, so that's where the program really is. That's my opinion. And as you will see, I stayed in New Hampshire and enjoyed the AA there very, very much. But eventually the time came for me to come back to Alabama. And I said to this marvelous priest who had been working in AA, was an alcoholic himself, he's dead now. I said, now, Father, when I go back to Alabama, I know a lot of priests that need this program. You reckon I ought to start a group right away? And he said, sit down, Father Henry. Does that sound familiar? I know whenever they say that now, it means you're going to get it. Beware of them in the old times that sit down. And he said, when you go back to Alabama, I suggest. Now, those are another code words. When an AA says, I suggest, that means you damn well better do it. He says, I suggest that when you go back to Alabama, you try to find a group that will let you in. I'm sitting there, you know, He says, if you do find one, I suggest further that you get in a corner and sit down and keep your mouth shut for 8 months. He said, if at the end of a year you find that you are mercifully sober, you might begin to commence to think about starting a new group. I went back to Alabama. I couldn't even find a group that would let me in. Because I looked in the phone book and they weren't there. I said, there's no AA in Coleman. a priest whom I love very much. I became a loner. This is true. After all the money they've spent on me, everything I've learned up here, I get back home. A priest who loved me very much, not an alcoholic, used to say to me, aren't you supposed to be going to some kind of meetings or something? I said, yeah, but they don't have me in Coleman. And he says, well, surely they have me in Decatur. That's only 30 miles up the line. Oh, I said, I don't need to go to those. I said, I read the big book every day. I read the 24-hour day book, and I share my experience, strength, and hope with those that I think can benefit from it. I wasn't a classical two-stepper. I didn't even have the first step. And I stayed that way from, well, June till December. That's the truth. And I'm convinced that this priest who loved me so much saw me getting crazier and crazier and crazier. Along in December, after I'd been dry for almost a year, he comes up to me and he hands me a piece of paper and he says, ring that telephone number. For your information, AA is alive and well in Coleman for the past 6 years. Who is willing to go to what lengths to get what we've got? He didn't leave me there. The next day, I said, you ring that phone? I said, yeah, they didn't answer. He kept after me. And then he says, when you ring? I said, midnight. That's the truth. He says, go to the phone, ring him up now. And I did. And I got one of my sponsors, Juby. And Juby is a beautiful man. Oh, my gracious. But I said, this is Father Hillary, and I am an alcoholic, and I need to go to a meeting. There was this long silence on the line. He says, Father, are you drunk now? I said, of course not. He said, well, it just so happens that we have a meeting tonight in Coleman at 8 o'clock. I'll be out to get you about 7:30. I said, fine, but don't come to the front of the college. I'll meet you down in the woods by the grotto. You know, it's a wonder they let me in. Attitude? Oh, my Lord in heaven. Oh, gracious. But I went up the steps. It was a year to the day. I went up the steps to the Coleman group that night. And I don't know whether you still remember how you felt when you went to your first AA meeting. I mean, when you were really in it. I'd been dry and I'd learned all this business, but I still, man, this was the end of the world going up those steps. We got 24 steps up to our club room, 12 for the traditions and 12 for the steps. And there's a platform in between where you make the meditation. And I walked up those steps and I opened up the door. And there stood a lady whom I had known as a splendid Catholic matron. I didn't know she was an alcoholic at all. From Decatur, Rosemary. And she said, hello, Father Hillary. Come in. We're glad to have you. You're where you belong. You'll be all right. She walked over and put an arm around me. Gave me a great big hug. You know, I didn't know that was a put-up deal for 3 years. When I finished calling Juby, Juby picked up the telephone and called Rosemary, and he says, Rosie, this is Juby. She says, yay. He says, come down to the Coleman meeting tonight. She says, I can't. I'm chairing a meeting up here. He says, I don't give a damn. You get down here. He says, I got a Catholic priest coming in here. I don't know a damn thing about Catholics, much less priests. You're a Catholic. Get down here and help me with him. Who is willing to go to what lengths? And I walked in and there was Rosemary. And I'll tell you, I'll go a long way for Rosemary today. It was 3 years before I found that out. Oh, Lord, I'm about through, honey child. Yeah, song's terrible. What's it been like, you know? I told you I'm trying to be rather than to seem to be. Holy smack. You know, you don't have to be afraid anymore. You remember those horrible fears? Sometimes you should have been afraid. What did you tell them? I don't remember what I told them. What did you sign? Where did the money go you had in your pocketbook, stupid? I don't know where the money is. I think one of the nicest things for me has been that I can remember the ending of every party I go to now. You remember? Huh? There came a time when you... You know, 10 o'clock was the last thing you remembered. I remember everything that happens there. Sometimes, you know, the big book tells us if you've got to go to those places, you go on. Don't get upset. I'm frequently called to go to cocktail parties for whatever reason. I go and watch the amateurs perform. Only when I've got to. And Juby taught me something else, and I'll just pass that on to you. I said, you know, at times, with alumni, this, that, and the other, I've got to go to these parties. He says, well, number one, they never are a surprise to you, are they? You know you've got to go. I said, yeah. He said, well, when you get up in the morning, say how you feel. And if you feel pretty good, your AA is going fine, go on to the party. If you feel nervous in the service, just tell him you're sick and you can't go. He says, you are. And when I'm feeling that way, I don't hesitate to send word. I'm sorry, the abbot's not well this evening, and he can't go. And I go to an AA meeting, pray for him. Again, my sponsor tells me, I've got to tell you this, and that's... In 1972, the monks of St. Bernard elected me the seventh abbot of the monastery and chancellor of the college. That's what these chains and rings are all about. And that says something very special to me about the monks of St. Bernard. Although I suppose I can put it to you best by saying that when the election was over, the young monks who do not vote got the word, and the bells are ringing, and they're running up and down the halls in the monastery shouting all the way with AA. And so the priesthood and St. Bernard have been given back to me in the way which is beyond my wildest dreams. As anything I can say would be this, that I am trying to be grateful. I am so thankful for everything that has happened that has brought me to this day. I am so grateful. Each church service I go to, I no longer ask God for anything. I just keep saying, thank you, dear Lord. Thank you for bringing me to this day. Thank you for giving me your help, your understanding, giving me the AA program. Let me practice these principles another day. And I'm just looking at you for a few minutes because I want to remember you when I go away tomorrow. Thank you for listening to me.